Have you ever admired a friend or coworker's creative abilities? Is it something they were born with, or can creativity be learned and nurtured? Do you wish that you could improve your own imaginative and innovative skills? Next on Access Minnesota, University of Minnesota cognitive neurologist Wilma Kutzdahl shares her research on the creative mind and how what she calls agile thinking can bring more originality and innovation to our daily lives.
Access Minnesota. Issues that matter to you. Access Minnesota brings you the newsmakers and the stories that shape our everyday lives with analysis from University of Minnesota faculty experts. Access Minnesota is produced by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association in cooperation with the university's College of Liberal Arts and Radio K, KUOM. Now, here's Jim Dubois.
Our guest is Wilma Kutzdahl. She's a cognitive neuroscientist and psychology professor at the University of Minnesota. She's the author of the book, The Agile Mind, out on Oxford University Press, and the author of the upcoming book, Agile Minds, Agile Organizations, A Thinking Framework for Creativity and Change. Professor Kutzdahl, welcome to Access Minnesota.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Your work focuses on mental agility. What exactly is that, and how is that different from, say, creativity?
That's a very good question. I think mental agility is a broader concept than creativity. Certainly, mental agility often involves creativity, but mental agility encompasses ideas such as resilience, which is our ability to kind of bounce back when things are not going well, or also our ability to exert self-regulatory control when we need to, so times when we need to be a little bit more disciplined or careful, and also our ability to let go when we need to. So it's kind of a very broad, kind of higher level of abstraction maybe than creativity encompasses more concepts.
Let's talk a bit about the concept of resilience. We see a lot of studies revolving around resilience, saying, for example, that resilient children generally do better in life because they're able to overcome the obstacles they face. Certainly, many, many creative people have been challenged by multiple failures as they're trying to come up with a new idea, a new concept, a new piece of art, a scientific discovery. How important is resilience, and is it something that is somewhat innate? Is it somewhat either you have it or you don't, or can you learn to be more resilient?
I do think we can certainly learn to be more resilient. I think I agree that resilience is very important in terms of in the face of things like failure and sort of short-term failure and maybe larger failures. A couple of sort of contributions for thinking about mental agility in relation to resilience are, I think sometimes one reason we're not as resilient as we might be is because we're thinking in a too abstract way. We're kind of overgeneralizing, and that's certainly a frequent reason why we might feel that a failure is more important than it really is in the grand scheme of things. So sometimes, like, we could increase our resilience by thinking, well, you know, could I zoom out a bit? You know, does it really matter that I made this mistake? Or how could I think of this mistake as actually an opportunity? Could I flip it in some way and make it into a learning opportunity, or actually capitalizing on mistakes? I think that's one important thing that artists do, is they kind of make the most of the mistake rather than sort of thinking that it has to be something that's covered up, or because things can be a little too perfect sometimes, and artists are very, I think good artists are very aware of that, that they kind of leave a little bit of imperfection.
Studying the mind seems like an extraordinarily complex task. Tell us about some of the complexities of researching this particular subject.
That's a huge question. And first of all, like, one of the questions is, what do we mean by the mind? And that's very daunting on its own. It's kind of like, well, it's a whole universe on its own. And so I think one of the things that happens, and we're all kind of guilty of it, is that we kind of segment things then when it seems too big and too challenging. And so we focus on some portions of it. And certainly in cognitive neuroscience and in psychology, we do that a lot. Like, so instead of talking about studying the mind, we talk about studying perception or studying attention. But the mind is all of those things, and kind of in dynamic interaction. action. And I think that's part of what the concept of mental agility is trying to get at, is this kind of like the mind in motion and the mind kind of actually struggling with situations, as well as more discrete functions that we do always perform, but that can be too segmented or separate compared to what our everyday life is like when we're interacting and talking to one another and so forth, where it's not just one thing, one compartment or another.
The standard model for cognition divides thinking into two parts, intuitive thinking and rational thinking. Are we one or the other? Can we be both? I know we talk a lot about people who are intuitive thinkers and rational thinkers, and it seems like never the twain shall meet. But tell us more about, first of all, those two divisions of cognition. And do people tend to fall into one category or the other, or can there be a melding of the two?
Okay, so first, kind of the distinction, and I do want to say that it is sort of it's a easy distinction for us to make in some ways, and it makes us feel comfortable to divide things into two, and we can remember two things. But I doubt that we're always in one or the other. We might maybe have preferences for one or the other, or in some ways have strengths in one or the other, but I think we're all partly intuitive and partly more rational. The way cognitive psychologists and so forth have typically divided these two is sort of the rational system or reasoning system is more slow, or sequential, one thing after another, maybe more neutral rather than emotional, more effortful, more rule governed, as opposed to intuition, which might be more tinged. This is the traditional kind of view, more tinged with emotion, maybe more like perception in some ways. When we think about intuition, it does have a kind of perception-like quality where it's kind of like you extract patterns and so forth. So the distinction is really about the process of thinking, how we tend to think.
Our guest is Wilma Kutstall. She's a cognitive neuroscientist and psychology professor at the University of Minnesota. She's the author of the book, The Agile Mind, out on Oxford University Press. Also the author of the upcoming book, Agile Minds, Agile Organizations, A Thinking Framework for Creativity and Change. You've developed a framework for the agile mind called the Integrated, Controlled, Automatic, Specific, Abstract, or ICASA, which is more nuanced than the standard model. Tell us about that.
It is definitely builds on and related to the distinction that we were just talking about between intuition and reasoning. But a key concept and quite fundamental is what I call mental representational accessibility landscapes, or we could call them idea landscape for short. And what this is about is we have vast amounts of knowledge and ideas and so forth, but they're not always at the forefront of awareness. They come up and they go down and they move. And so a key question in creativity and in mental agility is, how do we have certain ideas accessible to us at a given moment or when we need them? And so that's kind of the core, that the central point of the ICASA framework is this kind of mental accessibility landscape. And we tend to think of ideas as very conceptual, but they're not just in our minds. Our minds is populated not just with concepts, but also with emotions. We tend to not think about emotions so much, but emotions are also representations in our mind, and we think about our emotions and we can regulate them and control them and so forth. Also perceptions, of course, like what we're perceiving, what we're hearing, what we're seeing, what we're touching. There's also levels of specificity, and I think that this is a greatly overlooked aspect in our thinking about thinking, and we have kind of everyday expressions for this, like sort of seeing the forest versus seeing the trees, but there's many levels in between that as well, right? And in the forthcoming book, we talk about this as detail stepping. There's many different gradations in how specific we can be, and what level of abstraction we're at can very much change what types of ideas come to mind and what connections we can make and so forth. And We want sometimes to be more abstract, sometimes we want to be more specific, and often we want to be able to move between them and have what I call oscillatory range, like so being able to move from quite abstract to mid-level or mid-level of abstractions to getting right into the details. And depending on circumstances, those different levels are important. The other main component of the ICASA framework is kind of that all of this is all occurring in your brain and in an environment. We're never not in our brains. We're never not in an environment. And environment is easy to say. It's one word. It sounds like a simple thing, but environment is kind of time and space and in all of their gradations, very important. And it's continually shaping our brain. Like, it's not just our mind, it's our mind-brain together.
Our guest is Wilma Kutstall. She's a cognitive neuroscientist and psychology professor at the University of Minnesota. She's the author of the book, The Agile Mind. It's on Oxford University Press, and the author of the upcoming book, Agile Minds, Agile Organizations, A Thinking Framework for Creativity and Change. We'll be back in just a moment.
Access Minnesota will return after these messages.
Welcome back to Golden Gopher Fanatics. My guest today is a solar car, and he's so loyal to the University of Minnesota that he's painted his entire body in maroon and gold.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be here.
We're glad to have you. Now do tell, why is a solar car like you such a big fan of the U of M?
Oh, I'd be happy to explain. You see, the U of M is partnering with 3M to illuminate possibilities in energy efficiency and to train the next generation of brilliant innovators.
Interesting. Now, how does that affect you?
Oh, they've developed this cutting-edge anti-reflective material to help absorb as much of the sun's energy as possible to fuel me. Oh, it's amazing how far and smooth I run now. Oh, and they're bringing these learnings to other energy industries, too.
Well, that marks a record for how many times a guest has beeped out on our show.
I can't help it, man. It's been a pleasure. Woohoo!
The U of M and 3M, partnering to illuminate possibilities. Discover how at umn.edu.